Вы слушаете радио Айда.
Oder Radio Ойда. Eine Sendung von Radio Эх auf Deutsch. Эх, Ойда, auf Deutsch. Jeden dritten und vierten Donnerstag im Monat.
Briefe aus Sibirien.
Ein Audio-Tour durch Kunsträume in jetzt abgeschlossenen Wildgegenden von Heidi Brunschweiler und Victoria Ballon. Die Senderei ist eine Kooperation zwischen der Galerie für Gegenwartkunst, IWERK und Ech Ojda Radio Dreieckland.
Wie kann man heute, angesichts der geschlossenen Grenzen, mit fernen Orten in Verbindung bleiben? Senderei Briefe aus Sibirien versucht, den empathischen Austausch mit Künstlern aus aller Welt weiterzuführen. In jeder Sendung berichtet eine Künstlerin oder ein Künstler aus dem Ort, in dem sie oder er eingesperrt ist.
Heute führt Taus Makhachewa auf einer Audiotour durch ihr temporäres Studio in Dubai. Taus ist eine international renommierte Künstlerin, die konzeptuell zwischen Video, Sound, Skulptur und Installation arbeitet. In ihren Arbeiten geht es um Wertentstehung und Wertzuschreibung von Kunstwerken und Sammlungen. Wie werden diese zum Beispiel übersetzt oder transformiert, wenn verschiedene Kulturen und Traditionen miteinander in Kontakt kommen? Taus ist in Moskau geboren und hat kulturelle Wurzeln in der Kaukasusregion Dagestan. Sie studierte Kunst in London und Moskau. Ihre Arbeiten waren unter anderem an der Biennale von Venedig, der Manifesta in Palermo oder an der Liverpool Biennale ausgestellt. Einzelausstellungen fanden unter anderem in Leeds, der Cardist Art Foundation in Paris oder im Van Abbe Museum in Eindhoven statt. Ihre berühmteste Arbeit ist Tightrope. Auf diesem Video balanciert ein Seiltänzer 62 Bildkopien aus der Sammlung des Dagestan Museum für Bildende Kunst über einen Abgrund zwischen zwei Bergen in einer Landschaft. Genau diese Arbeit hat die Kuratorin Nicole Schweitzer in Lausanne inspiriert, Taus für ihren Projektraum einzuladen, um über Kunst nachzudenken. Heute sind die beiden, Taus und Nicole, bei uns im Studio und im Gespräch. Wir haben Taus, wie alle anderen Künstlerinnen der Serie Briefe aus Sibirien, gefragt, wo sie aktuell ist.
It's nice I can submit a vocal letter about my surroundings and about sort of my studio concerning sort of the, I guess, the theme of our meeting or the first imaginary. It's a walk through different spaces, but I think the space I can offer right now is my inner space and my space of thinking and production and how do I see this moment. And I think this is exactly what became very evident in the past few months, the spaces that we inhabit ourselves and not necessarily what is outside because we have very little contact with the outside. So I am currently in Dubai because this is where I got locked down. I was actually opening an exhibition at the MCBA with Nicole in the middle of the March. And then sort of, then I felt that the ground was shaking more than usual and decided to fly to Dubai to be with my partner who just started a job here. So I've luckily ended up in a lockdown with him. I mean, in sort of completely alien environment, of course, alien temperatures and things, but at least with, yes, not at least, but with the person I'd like to be locked down with. I must confess, I have bought watercolors at the beginning, not at the beginning, maybe 2 months ago, and I haven't even touched them. So I think my imaginary of my artistic production and that is very different from my real artistic production. And at the moment, yes, at the moment, my studio is in my computer and it is very often in my computer. Of course, on the other end, I have several people I work with. I have a studio director, an archivist, sort of a part-time PA and another part-time project manager. So we were constantly in touch and we're developing projects. So actually a lot of things happen online. A lot of things happen sort of in the digital space anyway, whether I'm traveling or whether I'm somewhere here. But I think one of the things, so what I'm surrounded with is actually just a very ordinary living room. I've been spending on flowers more than usual. So there's several bunches of flowers around me, which sort of keeps me cheerful and enriches my fluctuating inner space. I think I'm sort of like, I see it as rummaging in different spaces. Like I rummage in forest, I rummage through dumpsters, I rummage through other landscapes, man-made or non-made, and I sort of collect references. I'm quite a sort of a passionate collector in a way. I collect phrases, I collect sometimes dreams, intuitions. And I think this is also one of the experiences I've been missing in the lockdown is actually exhibitions. It's actually going to museums, but going to so many places at the same time.
Nicole, tell us, you are a curator at the Platform 10, Museum Cantonal des Beaux-Arts, Lausanne, so a really brand new museum space. Could you tell us a bit about Platform number 10 and the Musée Cantonal des Beaux-Arts?
It's a museum which is very old. It's mid-19th century. And so what is new is the premises and the fact that this Platform 10 means that on the same location we will have eventually in 2 years' time, three museums, the Photography Museum, the Design Museum, and the Fine Arts Museum. But for the time being, there's our building, the Museum of Fine Arts, where we moved last year. And this is somehow part of the project with Taos, because that was kind of the incentive also for the invitation to have an artist work with this transition, work with the collection, work with the history. So the Museum of Fine Arts now, what makes it maybe a little bit different from what it was before is that we have at last a space where we can display the permanent collection, because we've always had like 1,000 square meters to do both contemporary and also modern art shows, both local, national and international. But over the years, building up a collection and never or hardly ever being able to show it made no sense, and hence this whole process towards having a new building. So this is one aspect of the museum, of the new museum now. The other aspect is that I'm curator of contemporary art, but I haven't had the space mostly to invite artists to do new commissions. And so we devised this space, which we call the project space, where we have 3 to 4 exhibitions a year, where we can invite artists to develop a project which is specifically designed for the space. And this is something which to me is really exciting, because I've done mid-career retrospectives, bigger exhibitions, but this kind of scale of a 230 square meter space, which is actually quite a massive space also to have one installation, and to be able to work with an artist over time is something I enjoy very, very much. And so I've been working with artists who were interested in collections also from locally, but I wanted for this first exhibition in the project space to have an artist look at us from a different perspective and a different position. And so when I saw Taos's video Tightrope at the Venice Biennale in 2017, I knew I wanted to meet her.
Taos, could you describe what we see and hear in Lausanne and what your conceptual framework was behind.
So the show is called 4,224.92 square centimeters of Degas. And it's a mixed media installation with two audio tracks. And it started off with a lot of conversations that I had with Nicole. I think we like Skyped every month practically for the duration of 2 years. And I'm also very grateful to her for the trust. Trusting me persistently and sort of resiliently without me telling what I was going to do and without me knowing what I was going to do for, well, I'd say more than a year and 3-4 months. I think only maybe 8 months before the opening, sort of there was a shape that came out of all the questions that I've collected, out of all the conversations we've had. I mean, we've talked to Camille Del Ancast, who was sort of an archivist of the museum, and she provided an incredible amount of letters of how works were acquired, how works sort of left the collection, arrived at the collection. We talked to Camille Levesque Claudet, who's also one of the curators at the museum, and who actually told us the story that he discovered of pieces of pastel of Degas missing, because it was different in the catalogue raisonné of the art, the washerwoman. And basically, I couldn't stop thinking about it. What is the strip? What are these strips on top, on sides of the pastel that went missing? Like, how much would a square centimeter of Degas be worth? And who would cut it off? So kind of my fantasy, I got really stuck there, and my fantasy started sort of expanding. This is a little bit about the research. And then what you see a large scale installation with soft objects covered in fabric that remind you of ruins of walls. Maybe it's ruins of walls of the museums. Maybe it's ruins of walls of several buildings. And you see embroideries on top in sort of a cross section of these walls. And the embroideries are stories. Are stories how different artworks ended up in museum collections. And not only MC, not only the Fine Art Museum of Lausanne, but also other museums around the world. Some of them are fictional, some of them are real. But anyway, it's more of a human story of a museum, and stories that is sort of hidden, that is within the walls of the museums. This is one element. Then a few other elements. Another element is these very long stretches of fabric hanging in the space, which actually feature these missing pieces of the washerwoman pastel by Degas, and also two audio tracks. One was commissioned to Yevgeny Gorbunov, who's a sound artist in Russia, and he created a track based on some of the intuitions that I've been thinking about and we've discussed. Because as I arrived for the first time to the museum, I talked about what would be the worst disasters. How's the building built? And apparently the building is built to withstand an explosion of a train with sort of petrol, or not necessarily petrol, but like some type of like flammable liquid. So kind of the museum is built having in mind a potential scariest sort of thing that can happen to it. Also, all of the plinths were left out at the older museum because of the fear of pests and termites. So kind of, I guess this track was a collection of those fears in a way. And a lot of these fears fed into production of the work as well.
I mean, there are six stories in the track Taos just described. So which story is your favorite?
Because I'm someone who really loves novels, like I feed on novels, I like the story about what the washerwoman is, except for just this woman who has been painted and whose name we don't know and whose life we don't know about. So I like the fact that the author kind of fleshed her out and gave her a story, gave her...
All these stories you could call, or for me, they're institutional critique. Do these stories, Nicole, reflect some of the challenges you are facing while working with a museum collection that has just quite a history?
I think I'm very grateful to Taos that she has taken on this role, which we often kind of delegate to artists because it's so much easier than speaking out ourselves, to kind of look at the institutions both from, you know, with a kind eye from the inside, but also from a step aside. And so working with Taos has not been an epiphany, but it has been a very kind of instructive and enriching experience, because it's not that she opened my eyes about the museum or its collection, but she allowed me to kind of bring to the fore things about the collection, to question also my relationship, my kind of, we all have this kind of fetishistic relation with collections also, and the stories they carry or don't carry. So in that sense, I think that what Taos has done with this work is quite amazing. And what one mustn't forget is that in this process, she has created yet another work. And so her work is, although it's not part of the collection, is part of that, you know, mental collection of works talking about what is it? What is it that fascinates us so much about these objects, these spaces, these sounds, these new stories we can inhabit?
But if I may add, it's also like, you know, I just remembered this visit to V&A Museum, and very early on, I don't know, I was like a BA student, and then on the frame, one of the paintings had a writing, gift of an artist. And then I sort of started thinking, it's like how many artworks don't talk about their like provenance, but also like, because I also was working with the Moscow Museum of Modern Art, and they were very sort of diligent in labeling if it was gift by someone, but the artistic gifts always sort of stayed, or always, very often stayed behind. So it's also kind of this cross section of how of stories, whether it was, you know, a gift in as a gratitude for a museum for keeping the world works throughout the Second World War, whether it was something else, like it was I thought it was very important to open up. And also, for example, there's an element in the installation which looks like a ceiling that you it's like a mattress with holes that you put your head through, and that's when you are able to listen to this termite pest soundtrack. So it's literally like kind of giving an opportunity to any visitor to kind of put your head through the ceiling of the museum, to penetrate it, to, I don't know, become its dust.
Let's move on to let's move on to your most famous piece, the WIF 2015, which was presented at the Venice Biennale in 2017. Could you describe in a few words what we see in the video and what the idea behind the work is?
So in the video, you see two small mountain sort of tops or platforms, between which there's a tightrope, and there's a tightrope walker walking between them carrying paintings. And on each sort of hill or mountain, you see structures where all these paintings are put. And on one side, paintings are structured by size in what I call a bicycle rack in my mind. And in the other, there's like a cube which imitates museum storage. And he takes across all the paintings, about 60, and he balances with them. So instead of balancing pole, most of the time he's using paintings. And he puts them in certain order, in certain perhaps museum storage order. Main thing that triggered this work was sort of value of collections. how they're valued, how they're preserved, and how much is falling into the cracks of the system, into the cracks of the country, into the cracks of sort of underfunded, I guess, cultural field. And this was one of the things. But another thing I was thinking were doubts that every artist has when they produce a work. Will it enter history? Does it mean anything? How will it be preserved in the future? So it's kind of at the same time personal, and on the other hand, it's institutional. And also, of course, it has questions about invisible histories of art and what has to happen in order to make a certain regional history of art visible.
Could you say a few words about the collection, the Dagestan Museum of Fine Art? Why is your grandfather in this, or the portrait of your grandfather in this collection?
The collection is indeed copies of actually 62 works from Dagestani Museum of Fine Art, and we base them on the article written by a local art historian, Jamila Dagirova, and took one work per each artist that she mentioned in her overview of the whole sort of history of art of the region. There's some sort of like non-objective history of art, let's put it that way. My grandfather was a very famous poet in USSR, so he was very often depicted in paintings, sculptures. So that's a very, very simple question answer to your question. So that's how he made it into a museum. And it's only one work with him, you know. I'm glad it's only one sort of seeped in to the project. And I think the Dagestani Museum of Fine Art has been very, very actively on my mind because I grew up there and my grandmother was a director of the museum. Well, now it sounds weird, you know, my grandmother collected the works with my grandfather. It sounds very cliquey and family-like, but what can I do? That's the truth. One other story, and I've always been interested in bodies that support collections and support art and spend their life actually doing it. And there was actually one more story, which I love that came out of it. I also have an alter ego whose name is Super Taos. And she's a sort of a woman that lives in the mountains and very, very strong. And she actually appeared after I met a superhero from Iran, Super Sohrab, but he has no superpowers. He only wears a superhero costume, but sometimes succeeds, sometimes fails. But essentially his practice is about redefining our current vision of masculinity. Let's say that. So Super Taos, she discovered a story about two invigilators, Maria Karkmasova and Khamisat Abdullaeva, who saved a Rodchenko painting in the 90s, which was, there was an attempted theft. So the thief cut it out and started running. And these two women in their 50s and 40s ran after him and like snatched it back. And none of the reports at the time, because I researched local newspapers about the incident, mentioned their names or that they did it. It was all said like, oh, police stopped it. Another version was that male art historian that was working, the only, I think, male art historian that was working in the museum prevented it. But this wasn't the case. It was actually these two women. So Super Taos built a monument, a 300-kilo bronze monument, and carried it on her back into different spaces, carried it in on her back into around Pompidou, trying to find a good place for it, carried it at the Moscow Museum of Modern Art in Dagestan, you know, to try to make it visible, the invisibility of labor and that particular story to these women who have names, carried it in her sturdy black shoes, that she does everything with.
A Super Taos is performed by yourself, yes? Could you say why you bring in yourself into your artwork as a persona? What does this allow you to articulate or to tell?
So firstly, I radically disagree with the word performed. She is not performed. She lives her life simultaneously. She lives in Dagestan. She has a family. A few years ago, she won this prize as a young artist of the year, even though she doesn't position herself as an artist. And what she does, she doesn't even call artwork, she calls it life-affirming practices. So sometimes when I can't handle things or I don't have enough time, I ask her to help me out and like do a performance instead of me or take part in the exhibition instead of me. So to me, it's a parallel life. It's a parallel life which sort of continues and goes on, and possibly a life that I should have been living or could have been living. But in a way, I allow her to be what she wants to be, and she allows me to be what I want to be by like our sheer existence.
By addressing playfulness, humor, and also seduction, Nicole, you were mentioning the quality, playfulness, and humor before. Probably you could give us some example.
I don't think that it's only humor in the sense of, you know, laughter. I think it's humor in the sense that the practice itself doesn't take itself so deadly seriously. So when you look at Supertaus, I mean, it's something which is, there's always a kind of distance, although it touches upon major topics that we've mentioned before. Or for example, in the Lausanne installation, there is a lot of humor which you cannot see at first sight, but which is also hidden in the process.